I'm not doing anything. Not until tomorrow, now.
What's that you got there?
Nothing. Pair of shoes I had half sold. Not until tomorrow, you hear?
Sure, all right.
Oh, by the way, did you get a letter off the table this morning?
No.
It's there. From Semiramis. Chauffeur brought it before 10 o'clock.
All right, I'll get it.
Wonder what she wants now.
Another band recital, I guess. Tum-ti-ta-ta, Gerald, blah.
A little louder on the drum, Quentin.
God, I'm glad I'm not a gentleman.
He went on, nursing a book, a little shapeless, fatly intent. The street lamps.
Do you think so because one of our forefathers was a governor and three were generals and mothers weren't?
Any live man is better than any dead man, but no live or dead man is very much better than any other live or dead man.
Done in mother's mind, though. Finished. Finished. Then we were all poisoned.
You are confusing sin and morality. Women don't do that. Your mother is thinking of morality. Whether it be sin or not has not occurred to her.
Jason, I must go away. You keep the others. I'll take Jason and go where nobody knows us, so he'll have a chance to grow up and forget all this. The others don't love me. They have never loved anything with that streak of Compson selfishness and false pride. Jason was the only one my heart went out to without dread.
Nonsense. Jason is all right. I was thinking that as soon as you feel better, you and Caddy might go up to French Lick.
And leave Jason here with nobody but you and the darkies?
She will forget him, then. All the talk will die away.
Found not death at the Salt Licks.
Maybe I could find a husband for her.
Not death at the Salt Licks.
The car came up and stopped. The bells were still ringing the half hour. I got on, and it went on again, blotting the half hour. No, the three quarters. Then it would be 10 minutes anyway.
To leave Harvard,
your mother's dream for, sold Benji's pasture for.
What have I done to have been given children like these? Benjamin was punishment enough, and now for her to have no more regard for me, her own mother. I've suffered for her, dreamed and planned and sacrificed. I went down into the valley, yet never since she opened her eyes has she given me one unselfish thought. At times I look at her, I wonder if she can be my child. Except Jason, he has never given me one moment's sorrow since I first held him in my arms. I knew then that he was to be my joy and my salvation. I thought that Benjamin was punishment enough for any sins I have committed. I thought he was my punishment for putting aside my pride and marrying a man who held himself above me. I don't complain. I loved him above all of them because of it, because my duty— though Jason pulled at my heart all the while. But I see now that I have not suffered enough. I see now that I must pay for your sins as well as mine. What have you done? What sins have your high and mighty people visited upon me? But you'll take up for them. You always have found excuses for your own blood. Only Jason can do wrong because he is more Bascom than Compson. While your own daughter, my little daughter, my baby girl, she is no better than that. When I was a girl, I was unfortunate. I was only a Bascom. I was taught that there is no halfway ground, that a woman is either a lady or not. But I never dreamed when I held her in my arms that any daughter of mine could let herself. Don't you know? I can look at her eyes and tell. You may think she'd tell you, but she doesn't tell things. She is secretive. You don't know her. I know things she's done that I'd die before I'd have you know.
That's it. Go on. Criticize Jason. Accuse me of setting him to watch her as if it were a crime, while your own daughter can— I know you don't love him, that you wish to believe faults against him. You never have. Yes, ridicule him, as you always have Maury. You cannot hurt me any more than your children already have, and then I'll be gone. And Jason, with no one to love him, shield him from this. I look at him every day dreading to see this Compson blood beginning to show in him at last, with his sister slipping out to see—
What do you call it, then? Have you ever laid eyes on him? Will you even let me try to find out who he is?
It's not for myself. I couldn't bear to see him. It's for your sake, to protect you.
But who can fight against bad blood?
You won't let me try. We are to sit back with our hands folded while she not only drags your name in the dirt but corrupts the very air your children breathe.
Jason, you must let me go away. I cannot stand it. Let me have Jason, and you keep the others. They're not my flesh and blood like he is. Strangers, nothing of mine. And I am afraid of them. I can take Jason and go where we are not known. I'll go down on my knees and pray for the absolution of my sins that he may escape this curse. Try to forget that the others ever were. If that was the three quarters, not over 10 minutes now. One car had just left, and people were already waiting for the next one. I asked, but he didn't know whether another one would leave before noon or not, because you'd think that interurbans. So the first one was another trolley. I got on. You can feel noon. I wonder if even miners in the bowels of the earth. That's why whistles, because people that sweat, and if just far enough from sweat you won't hear whistles, and in 8 minutes you should be that far from sweat in Boston. Father said a man is the sum of his misfortunes. One day you'd think misfortune would get tired, but then time is your misfortune, Father said. A gull on an invisible wire attached through space dragged. You carry the symbol of your frustration into eternity. Then the wings are bigger, Father said. Only who can play a harp? I could hear my watch whenever the car stopped, but not often. They were already eating. Who would play a... Eating, the business of eating, inside of you, space, too, space and time confused, stomach saying noon, brain saying 8 o'clock. All right. I wonder what time it is, what of it? People were getting out. The trolley didn't stop so often now, emptied by eating. Then it was past. I got off and stood in my shadow, and after a while a car came along and I got on and went back to the interurban station. There was a car ready to leave, and I found a seat next to the window, and it started, and I watched it sort of frazzle out into slack-tide flats, and then trees. Now and then I saw the river, and I thought how nice it would be for them down at New London if the weather, and Gerald Shell going solemnly up the glinting forenoon, and I wondered what the old woman would be wanting now, sending me a note before 10 o'clock in the morning. What picture of Gerald, I to be one of the... Dalton Ames. Oh, asbestos. Quentin has shot... Background. Something with girls in it. Women do have... Always his voice above the gabble voice that breathed. An affinity for evil, for believing that no woman is to be trusted, but that some men are too innocent to protect themselves. Plain girls. Remote cousins and family friends, whom mere acquaintanceship invested with a sort of blood obligation noblesse oblige. And she sitting there telling us before their faces what a shame it was that Gerald should have all the family looks, because a man didn't need it, was better off without it, but without it a girl was simply lost. Telling us about Gerald's women in a... Quentin has shot Herbert. He shot his voice through the floor of Caddy's room. Tone of smug approbation. When he was 17, I said to him one day, "What a shame that you should have a mouth like that. It should be on a girl's face. And can you imagine..." The curtains leaning in on the twilight upon the odor of the apple tree, her head against the twilight, her arms behind her head kimono-winged, the voice that breathed o'er Eden, clothes upon the bed by the nose seen above the apple. "What," he said, "just 17, mind." "Mother," he said, "it often is." And him sitting there in attitudes regal, watching two or three of them through his eyelashes. They gushed like swallows swooping his eyelashes. Shreve said he always had... "Are you going to look after Benji and Father?" "The less you say about Benji and Father, the better. When have you ever considered them, Caddy?" "Promise." "You needn't worry about them. You're getting out in good shape." "Promise. I'm sick. You'll have to promise." Wondered who invented that joke, but then he always had considered Mrs. Bland a remarkably preserved woman. He said she was grooming Gerald to seduce a duchess sometime. She called Shreve that fat Canadian youth. Twice she arranged a new roommate for me without consulting me at all. Once for me to move out, once for... He opened the door in the twilight. His face looked like a pumpkin pie. "Well, I'll say a fond farewell. Cruel fate may part us, but I will never love another. Never." "What are you talking about?" "I'm talking about cruel fate in 8 yards of apricot silk, and more metal pound for pound than a galley slave, and the sole owner and proprietor of the unchallenged, peripatetic John of the late Confederacy." Then he told me how she had gone to the proctor to have him moved out, and how the proctor had revealed enough low stubbornness to insist on consulting Shreve first. Then she suggested that he send for Shreve right off and do it, and he wouldn't do that, so after that she was hardly civil to Shreve. "I make it a point never to speak harshly of females," Shreve said, "but that woman has got more ways like a bitch than any lady in these sovereign states and dominions." And now letter on the table by hand, command, orchid-scented, colored. if she knew I had passed almost beneath the window, knowing it there without? My dear madam, I have not yet had an opportunity of receiving your communication, but I beg in advance to be excused today, or yesterday, and tomorrow, or when— As I remember that the next one is to be how Gerald throws his nigger downstairs, and how the nigger pled to be allowed to matriculate in the divinity school to be near Marster, Marse Gerald, and how he ran all the way to the station beside the carriage with tears in his eyes when Marse Gerald rid away. I will wait until the day, for the one about the sawmill husband came to the kitchen door with a shotgun. Gerald went down and bit the gun in two and handed it back and wiped his hands on a silk handkerchief, threw the handkerchief in the stove. I've only heard that one twice.
Shot him through the—
I saw you come in here, so I watched my chance and came along, thought we might get acquainted, have a cigar.
Thanks, I don't smoke.
No, things must have changed up there since my day. Mind if I light up?
Help yourself.
Thanks, I've heard a lot. I guess your mother won't mind if I put the match behind the screen, will she? A lot about you. Candace talked about you all the time up there at the Licks. I got pretty jealous. I says to myself, who is this Quentin anyway? I must see what this animal looks like. Because I was hit pretty hard, see, soon as I saw the little girl. I don't mind telling you, it never occurred to me it was her brother she kept talking about. She couldn't have talked about you any more if you'd been the only man in the world. Husband wouldn't have been in it. You won't change your mind and have a smoke?
I don't smoke.
In that case, I won't insist, even though it is a pretty fair weed. Cost me $25, $100 wholesale. Friend of— in Havana. Yes, I guess there are lots of changes up there. I keep promising myself a visit, but I never get around to it. Been hitting a ball now for 10 years. I can't get away from the bank during school. Fellows' habits change. Things that seem important to an undergraduate, you know. Tell me about things up there.
I'm not going to tell Father and Mother, if that's what you are getting at.
Not going to tell? Not going to—
Oh, that. That's what you are talking about, is it?
You understand that I don't give a damn whether you tell or not. Understand that a thing like that, unfortunate but no police crime, I wasn't the first or the last, I was just unlucky. You might have been luckier.
You lie.
Keep your shirt on. I'm not trying to make you tell anything you don't want to, and no offense. Of course, a young fellow like you would consider a thing of that sort a lot more serious than you will in 5 years.
I don't know but one way to consider cheating. I don't think I'm likely to learn different at Harvard.
We're better than a play. You must have made the dramat. Well, you're right. No need to tell them. We'll let bygones be bygones, eh? No reason why you and I should let a little thing like that come between us. I like you, Quentin. I like your appearance. You don't look like these other hicks. I'm glad we're going to hit it off like this. I've promised your mother to do something for Jason, but I would like to give you a hand, too. Jason would be just as well off here, but there's no future in a hole like this for a young fellow like you.
Thanks. You'd better stick to Jason. He'd suit you better than I would.
I'm sorry about that business, but a kid like I was then, I never had a mother like yours to teach me the finer points. It would just hurt her unnecessarily to know it. Yes, you're right. No need to. That includes Candace, of course.
I said mother and father.
Look here. Take a look at me. How long do you think you'd last with me?
I won't have to last long if you learn to fight up at school, too. Try and see how long I would.
You damned little— What do you think you're getting at?
Try and see.
My God, the cigar! What would your mother say if she found a blister on her mantle? Just in time, too. Look here, Quentin. We're about to do something we'll both regret. I like you, liked you as soon as I saw you. I says he must be a damned good fellow, whoever he is, or Candace wouldn't be so keen on him. Listen, I've been out in the world now for 10 years. Things don't matter so much, then. You'll find that out. Let's you and I get together on this thing, sons of old Harvard and all. I guess I wouldn't know the place now. Best place for a young fellow in the world. I'm going to send my sons there, give them a better chance than I had. Wait, don't go yet. Let's discuss this thing. A young man gets these ideas, and I'm all for them. Does him good while he's in school. Forms his character, good for tradition, the school. But when he gets out into the world, he'll have to get his the best way he can, because he'll find that everybody else is doing the same thing and be damned to. Here, let's shake hands and let bygones be bygones, for your mother's sake. Remember her health. Come on, give me your hand. Here, look at it. It's just out of convent. Look, not a blemish, not even been creased yet. See here?
To hell with your money.
No, no, come on. I belong to the family now, see? I know how it is with a young fellow. He has lots of private affairs. It's always pretty hard to get the old man to stump up for.
I know I haven't been there, and not so long ago either, but now I'm getting married and all, especially up there. Come on, don't be a fool. Listen, when we get a chance for a real talk, I want to tell you about a little widow over in town. I've heard that, too. Keep your damned money. Call it a loan, then. Just shut your eyes a minute, and you'll be 50. Keep your hands off of me. You'd better get that cigar off of the mantel. Tell and be damned, then. See what it gets you. If you were not a damned fool, you'd have seen that I've got them too tight for any half-baked Galahad of a brother. Your mother's told me about your sort, with your head swelled up. Come in. Oh, come in, dear. Quentin and I were just getting acquainted, talking about Harvard. Did you want me? Can't stay away from the old man, can she? Go out a minute, Herbert. I want to talk to Quentin. Come in, come in. Let's all have a gab fest and get acquainted. I was just telling Quentin. Go on, Herbert. Go out a while. Well, all right, then. I suppose you and Bubber do want to see one another once more, eh? You'd better take that cigar off the mantel. Right as usual, my boy. Then I'll toddle along. Let them order you around while they can, Quentin. After day after tomorrow, it'll be pretty pleased to the old man, won't it, dear? Give us a kiss, honey. Oh, stop that. Save that for day after tomorrow. I'll want interest, then. Don't let Quentin do anything he can't finish. Oh, by the way, did I tell Quentin the story about the man's parrot and what happened to it? A sad story. Remind me of that. Think of it yourself. Ta-ta. See you in the funny paper. Well. Well. What are you up to now? Nothing. You're meddling in my business again. Didn't you get enough of that last summer? Caddy, you've got fever. You're sick. How are you sick? I'm just sick. I can't ask. Shot his voice through the... Not that blackguard, Caddy. Now and then the river glinted beyond things in sort of swooping glints, across noon and after. Good after now, though we had passed where he was still pulling upstream, majestical in the face of God, gods, better, gods. God would be canai too in Boston, in Massachusetts. Or maybe just not a husband. The wet oars winking him along in bright winks and female palms. Agilent. Agilent, if not a husband, he'd ignore God. That blackguard, Caddy. The river glinted away beyond a swooping curve. I'm sick, you'll have to promise. Sick? How are you sick? I'm just sick. I can't ask anybody yet. Promise you will. If they need any looking after, it's because of you. How are you sick? Under the window, we could hear the car leaving for the station. The 8:10 train. To bring back cousins. Heads. Increasing himself head by head, but not barbers. Manicure girls. We had a blood horse once. In the stable, yes, but under leather a cur. Quentin has shot all of their voices through the floor of Caddy's room. The car stopped. I got off into the middle of my shadow. A road across the track. There was a wooden marquee with an old man eating something out of a paper bag, and then the car was out of hearing, too. The road went into trees, where it would be shady, but June foliage in New England not much thicker than April at home. I could see a smokestack. I turned my back to it, tramping my shadow into the dust. There was something terrible in me. Sometimes at night I could see it grinning at me. I could see it through them grinning at me, through their faces. It's gone now, and I'm sick. Caddy. Don't touch me, just promise. If you're sick, you can't... Yes, I can. After that, it'll be all right. It won't matter. Don't let them send him to Jackson. Promise. I promise, Caddy. Caddy, don't touch me. Don't touch me. What does it look like, Caddy? What? That grins at you, that thing through them. I could still see the smokestack. That's where the water would be, healing out to the sea and the peaceful grottos. Tumbling peacefully they would, and when he said rise, only the flat irons. When Versh and I hunted all day, we wouldn't take any lunch, and at 12 o'clock I'd get hungry. I'd stay hungry until about 1, then all of a sudden I'd even forget that I wasn't hungry anymore. The street lamps go down the hill, then heard the car go down the hill. The chair arm flat, cool, smooth under my forehead, shaping the chair, the apple tree leaning on my hair above the Eden clothes by the nose seen. You've got fever. I felt it yesterday. It's like being near a stove. Don't touch me. Caddy, you can't do it if you are sick. That blackguard. I've got to marry somebody. Then they told me the bone would have to be broken again. At last I couldn't see the smokestack.
The road went beside a wall. Trees leaned over the wall, sprayed with sunlight. The stone was cool. Walking near it, you could feel the coolness. Only our country was not like this country. There was something about just walking through it, a kind of still and violent fecundity that satisfied even bread hunger-like. Flowing around you, not brooding and nursing every niggard stone. Like it were put to makeshift for enough green to go around among the trees and even the blue of distance, not that rich chimera. Told me the bone would have to be broken again, and inside me it began to say, ah, 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 and I began to sweat. What do I care? I know what a broken leg is. All it is won't be anything. I'll just have to stay in the house a little longer, that's all, and my jaw muscles getting numb and my mouth saying, wait, wait, just a minute, through the sweat, ah, 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 behind my teeth, and father, damn that horse, damn that horse. Wait, it's my fault. He came along the fence every morning with a basket toward the kitchen, dragging a stick along the fence. Every morning I dragged myself to the window, cast and all, and laid for him with a piece of coal. Dilsey said, you gonna ruin yourself, ain't you got no more sense than that? Not for days since you bruck it. Wait, I'll get used to it in a minute. Wait, just a minute, I'll get... Even sound seemed to fail in this air, like the air was worn out with carrying sounds so long. A dog's voice carries further than a train, in the darkness anyway, and some people's, niggers. Louis Hatcher never even used his horn carrying it and that old lantern. I said, Louis, when was the last time you cleaned that lantern? I cleaned it a little while back. You remember when all that flood water washed them folks away up yonder? I cleaned it that very day. Old woman and me setting for the fire that night, and she says, Louis, what you gwine do if that flood get out this fur? And I say, that's a fact. I reckon I'd better clean that landing up. So I cleaned it that night. That flood was way up in Pennsylvania, I said. It could never have got down this far. That's what you says, Louis said. Water can get des as high and wet in Jefferson as it can in Pennsylvania, I reckon. It's the folks that says the high water can't get this fur that comes floating out on the ridgepole, too. Did you and Martha get out that night? We done just that. I clent that lantern, and me and her sot the balance of the night on top of that knoll back to graveyard. And if I'd a knowed of A1 higher, we'd have been on hit instead. And you haven't cleaned that lantern since then? What I want to clean it when there ain't no need? You mean until another flood comes along? It kept us out of that un. Oh, come on, Uncle Louis, I said. Yes, sir. You do your way and I do mine. If all I got to do to keep out in the high water is to clean this here lantern, I won't quarrel with no man. Uncle Louis wouldn't catch nothing with the light he could see by, Verse said. I was hunting possums in this country when they were still drowned in nits in your pappy's head with coal oil, boy, Louis said. Catching 'em, too. That's the truth, Verse said. I reckon Uncle Louis done caught more possums than any man in this country. Yes, sir, Louis said. I got plenty light for possums to see, all right. I ain't heard none of them complaining. Hush now. Darry. Hooey. Come on, dog. And we'd sit in the dry leaves that whispered a little with the slow respiration of our waiting and with the slow breathing of the earth and the windless October, the rank smell of the lantern fouling the brittle air, listening to the dogs and to the echo of Louis's voice dying away. He never raised it, yet on a still night we have heard it from our front porch. When he called the dogs in, he sounded just like the horn he carried slung on his shoulder and never used, but clearer, mellower, as though his voice were a part of darkness and silence, coiling out of it, coiling into it again. Hoo-hoo! 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 Got to marry somebody. Have there been very many, Caddy? I don't know, too many. Will you look after Benji and Father? You don't know whose it is, then. Does he know? Don't touch me. Will you look after Benji and Father? I began to feel the water before I came to the bridge. The bridge was of gray stone, lichened, dappled with slow moisture where the fungus crept. Beneath it the water was clear and still in the shadow, whispering and clucking about the stone in fading swirls of spinning sky. Caddy, that... I've got to marry somebody. Verse told me about a man who mutilated himself. He went into the woods and did it with a razor, sitting in a ditch. a broken razor flinging them backward over his shoulder, the same motion, complete, the jerked skein of blood backward, not looping. But that's not it. It's not not having them. It's never to have had them. Then I could say, oh, that's Chinese, I don't know Chinese. And Father said it's because you are a virgin, don't you see? Women are never virgins. Purity is a negative state and therefore contrary to nature. It's nature is hurting you, not Caddy. And I said, that's just words. And he said, so is virginity. And I said, you don't know. You can't know. And he said, yes. On the instant when we come to realize that tragedy is second hand. Where the shadow of the bridge fell, I could see down for a long way, but not as far as the bottom. When you leave a leaf in water a long time, after a while the tissue will be gone and the delicate fibers waving slow as the motion of sleep. They don't touch one another, no matter how knotted up they once were, no matter how close they lay once to the bones. And maybe when he says rise, the eyes will come floating up too, out of the deep quiet and the sleep, to look on glory. And after a while the flat irons would come floating up. I hid them under the end of the bridge and went back and leaned on the rail. I could not see the bottom, but I could see a long way into the motion of the water before the eye gave out. And then I saw a shadow hanging like a fat arrow stemming into the current. Mayflies skimmed in and out of the shadow of the bridge just above the surface. If it could just be a hell beyond that, the clean flame, the two of us more than dead, then you will have only me, then the two of us amid the pointing and the horror beyond the clean flame. The arrow increased without motion. Then, in a quick swirl, the trout lipped a fly beneath the surface with that sort of gigantic delicacy of an elephant picking up a peanut. The fading vortex drifted away downstream, and then I saw the arrow again, nose into the current, wavering delicately to the motion of the water above which the mayflies slanted and poised. Only you and me, then, amid the pointing and the horror, walled by the clean flame. The trout hung, delicate and motionless among the wavering shadows. Three boys with fishing poles came onto the bridge, and we leaned on the rail and looked down at the trout. They knew the fish. He was a neighborhood character.
They've been trying to catch that trout for 25 years. There's a store in Boston offers a $25 fishing rod to anybody that can catch him.
Why don't you all catch him, then? Wouldn't you like to have a $25 fishing rod?
Yes, they said.
They leaned on the rail, looking down at the trout.
I sure would, one said.
I wouldn't take the rod, the second said. I'd take the money instead.
Maybe they wouldn't do that, the first said. I bet he'd make you take the rod.
Then I'd sell it. You couldn't get $25 for it.
I'd take what I could get then. I can catch just as many fish with this pole as I could with a $25 one.
Then they talked about what they would do with $25. They all talked at once, their voices insistent and contradictory and impatient, making of unreality a possibility, then a probability, then an incontrovertible fact, as people will when their desires become words.
I'd buy a horse and wagon, the second said.
Yes, you would, the others said.
I would. I know where I can buy one for $25. I know the man.
Who is it?
That's all right who it is. I can buy it for $25.
Yeah, the others said. He don't know any such thing. He's just talking.
Do you think so?
The boy said. They continued to jeer at him, but he said nothing more. He leaned on the rail, looking down at the trout, which he had already spent, and suddenly the acrimony, the conflict, was gone from their voices. As if to them, too, it was as though he had captured the fish and bought his horse and wagon. They, too, partaking of that adult trait of being convinced of anything by an assumption of silent superiority. I suppose that people, using themselves and each other so much by words, are at least consistent in attributing wisdom to a still tongue, and for a while I could feel the other two seeking swiftly for some means by which to cope with him, to rob him of his horse and wagon.
You couldn't get $25 for that pole, the first said. I bet anything you couldn't.
He hasn't caught that trout yet, the third said suddenly. Then they both cried.
Yeah, what'd I tell you? What's the man's name? I dare you to tell. There ain't any such man.
Shut up, the second said. Look, here he comes again.
They leaned on the rail, motionless, identical, their poles slanting slenderly in the sunlight, also identical. The trout rose without haste, a shadow in faint wavering increase. Again the little vortex faded slowly downstream.
"Gee," the first one murmured.
"We don't try to catch him anymore," he said. "We just watch Boston folks that come out and try."
"Is he the only fish in this pool?"
"Yes, he ran all the others out. The best place to fish around here is down at the eddy."
"No, it ain't," the second said. "It's better at Bigelow's Mill, 2-1.
Then they argued for a while about which was the best fishing, and then left off all of a sudden, to watch the trout rise again, and the broken swirl of water suck down a little of the sky. I asked how far it was to the nearest town. They told me.
"But the closest car line is that way," the second said, pointing back down the road.
"Where you going?"
"Nowhere, just walking."
"You from the college?"
"Yes."
"Are there any factories in that town?"
"Factories?"
They looked at me.
"No," the second said, "not there."
They looked at my clothes.
"You looking for work?"
"How about Bigelow's Mill?" the third said. "That's a factory."
"Factory, my eye, he means a sure enough factory."
"One with a whistle," I said. "I haven't heard any 1 o'clock whistles yet."
"Oh," the second said.
"There's a clock in the unitarial steeple. You can find out the time from that. Haven't you got a watch on that chain?"
"I broke it this morning."
I showed them my watch. They examined it gravely.
"It's still running," the second said.
"What does a watch like that cost?"
"It was a present," I said. "My father gave it to me when I graduated from high school."
"Are you a Canadian?" the third said.
He had red hair.
"Canadian?"
"He don't talk like them," the second said. "I've heard them talk. He talks like they do in minstrel shows."
"Say," the third said, "ain't you afraid he'll hit you?"
"Hit me?
You said he talks like a colored man."
"Dry up," the second said.
"You can see the steeple when you get over that hill there."
I thanked them.
"I hope you have good luck. Only don't catch that old fella down there. He deserves to be let alone."
"Can't anybody catch that fish," the first said.
They leaned on the rail, looking down into the water, the three poles like three slanting threads of yellow fire in the sun. I walked upon my shadow, tramping it into the dappled shade of trees again. The road curved, mounting away from the water. It crossed the hill, then descended winding, carrying the eye, the mind on ahead beneath a still green tunnel, and the square cupola above the trees and the round eye of the clock, but far enough. I sat down at the roadside. The grass was ankle-deep, myriad. The shadows on the road were as still as if they had been put there with a stencil, with slanting pencils of sunlight. But there was only a train, and after a while it died away beyond the trees, the long sound. And then I could hear my watch and the train dying away, as though it were running through another month or another summer somewhere, rushing away under the poised gull and all things rushing. Except Gerald. He would be sort of grand, too, pulling in lonely state across the noon, rowing himself right out of noon, up the long bright air like an apotheosis, mounting into a drowsing infinity where only he and the gull, the one terrifically motionless, the other in a steady and measured pull and recover that partook of inertia itself, the world punily beneath their shadows on the sun.
"Caddy, that blackguard, Caddy."
Their voices came over the hill, and the three slender poles like balanced threads of running fire. They looked at me passing, not slowing.
"Well," I said, "I don't see him."
"We didn't try to catch him," the first said. "You can't catch that fish."
"There's the clock," the second said, pointing. "You can tell the time when you get a little closer."
"Yes," I said, "all right." I got up.
"You all going to town?"
"We're going to the eddy for chub," the first said.
"You can't catch anything at the eddy," the second said.
"I guess you want to go to the mill with a lot of fellas splashing and scaring all the fish away."
"You can't catch any fish at the eddy."
"We won't catch none nowhere if we don't go on," the third said.
"I don't see why you keep on talking about the eddy," the second said. "You can't catch anything there."
"You don't have to go," the first said. "You're not tied to me."
"Let's go to the mill and go swimming," the third said.
"I'm going to the eddy and fish," the first said. "You can do as you please."
"Say, how long has it been since you heard of anybody catching a fish at the eddy?" the second said to the third. "Let's go to the mill and go swimming," the third said.
The cupola sank slowly beyond the trees, with the round face of the clock far enough yet. We went on in the dappled shade. We came to an orchard, pink and white. It was full of bees. Already we could hear them.
"Let's go to the mill and go swimming," the third said.
A lane turned off beside the orchard. The third boy slowed and halted. The first went on, flecks of sunlight slipping along the pole across his shoulder and down the back of his shirt.
"Come on," the third said.
The second boy stopped too.
"Why must you marry somebody, Caddy? Do you want me to say it? Do you think that if I say it, it won't be—"
"Let's go up to the mill," he said. "Come on." The first boy went on. His bare feet made no sound, falling softer than leaves in the thin dust. In the orchard, the bees sounded like a wind getting up, a sound caught by a spell just under crescendo and sustained. The lane went along the wall, arched over, shattered with bloom, dissolving into trees. Sunlight slanted into it, sparse and eager. Yellow butterflies flickered along the shade like flecks of sun.
"What do you want to go to the eddy for?" the second boy said. "You can fish at the mill if you want to."
"Ah, let him go," the third said. They looked after the first boy. Sunlight slid patchily across his walking shoulders, glinting along the pole like yellow ants.
"Kenny," the second said.
"Say it to father, will you? I will. My father's progenitive. I invented him, created I him. Say it to him. It will not be, for he will say I was not, and then you and I, since philoprogenitive."
"Ah, come on," the third boy said. "They're already in."
They looked after the first boy.
"Yeah," they said suddenly. "Go on then, Mama's boy. If he goes swimming, he'll get his head wet, and then he'll get a lickin'."
They turned into the lane and went on, the yellow butterflies slanting about them along the shade.
"It is because there is nothing else. I believe there is something else, but there may not be. And then you will find that even injustice is scarcely worthy of what you believe yourself to be."
He paid me no attention. His jaw set in profile, his face turned a little away beneath his broken hat.
"Why don't you go swimming with them?" I said.
"That blackguard, Caddy.
Were you trying to pick a fight with him, were you?
A liar and a scoundrel, Caddy, was dropped from his club for cheating at cards, got sent to Coventry, caught cheating at midterm exams, and expelled.
Well, what about it? I'm not going to play cards with—"
"Do you like fishing better than swimming?" I said. The sound of the bees diminished, sustained yet, as though instead of sinking into silence, silence merely increased between us, as water rises. The road curved again and became a street between shady lawns with white houses.
"Caddy, that blackguard, can you think of Benji and father and do it, not of me?
What else can I think about? What else have I thought about?"
The boy turned from the street. He climbed a picket fence without looking back, and crossed the lawn to a tree and laid the pole down and climbed into the fork of the tree and sat there, his back to the road and the dappled sun motionless at last upon his white shirt.
"Else have I thought about? I can't even cry. I died last year. I told you I had, but I didn't know then what I meant. I didn't know what I was saying."
Some days in late August at home are like this, the air thin and eager like this, with something in it sad and nostalgic and familiar. "Man, the sum of his climatic experiences," father said. "Man, the sum of what have you? A problem in impure properties carried tediously to an unvarying nil, stalemate of dust and desire."
"But now I know I'm dead, I tell you."
"Then why must you listen? We can go away, you and Benji and me, where nobody knows us, where—"
The buggy was drawn by a white horse, his feet clopping in the thin dust, spidery wheels chattering thin and dry, moving uphill beneath a rippling shawl of leaves. Elm. No, Elm. Elm.
"On what? On your school money, the money they sold the pasture for so you could go to Harvard? Don't you see you've got to finish now? If you don't finish, you'll have nothing."
"Sold the pasture."
His white shirt was motionless in the fork, in the flickering shade. The wheels were spidery. Beneath the sag of the buggy, the hooves, neatly rapid like the motions of a lady doing embroidery, diminishing without progress like a figure on a treadmill being drawn rapidly off stage. The street turned again. I could see the white cupola, the round, stupid assertion of the clock.
Sold the pasture. Father will be dead in a year, they say, if he doesn't stop drinking, and he won't stop. He can't stop since last summer. And then they'll send Benji to Jackson. I can't cry. I can't even cry.
1 minute she was standing in the door, the next minute he was pulling at her dress and bellowing, his voice hammered back and forth between the walls in waves, and she shrinking against the wall, getting smaller and smaller, with her white face, her eyes like thumbs dug into it, until he pushed her out of the room, his voice hammering back and forth, as though its own momentum would not let it stop, as though there were no place for it in silence bellowing.
When you opened the door, a bell tinkled, but just once, high and clear and small in the neat obscurity above the door, as though it were gauged and tempered to make that single, clear, small sound, so as not to wear the bell out, nor to require the expenditure of too much silence in restoring it, when the door opened upon the recent warm scent of baking. A little dirty child with eyes like a toy bear's and 2 patent leather pigtails.
"Hello, sister." Her face was like a cup of milk dashed with coffee in the sweet, warm emptiness. "Anybody here?" But she merely watched me until a door opened and the lady came. Above the counter, where the ranks of crisp shapes behind the glass, her neat gray face, her hair tight and sparse from her neat gray skull, spectacles and neat gray rims riding, approaching, like something on a wire, like a cash box in a store. She looked like a librarian. Something among dusty shelves of ordered certitudes long divorced from reality, desiccating peacefully, as if a breath of that air which sees injustice done.
2 of these, please, ma'am.
From under the counter she produced a square cut from a newspaper and laid it on the counter and lifted the 2 buns out. The little girl watched them with still and unwinking eyes, like 2 currents floating motionless in a cup of weak coffee, land of the kike, home of the wop. Watching the bread, the neat gray hands, a broad gold band on the left forefinger, knuckled there by a blue knuckle.
"Do you do your own bacon, ma'am?"
"Sir," she said, like that. "Sir," like on the stage. "Sir?"
"5 cents. Was there anything else?"
"No, ma'am. Not for me. This lady wants something." She was not tall enough to see over the case, so she went to the end of the counter and looked at the little girl.
"Did you bring her in here?"
"No, ma'am. She was here when I came."
"You little wretch," she said.
She came out around the counter, but she didn't touch the little girl.
"Have you got anything in your pockets?"
"She hasn't got any pockets," I said. "She wasn't doing anything. She was just standing here waiting for you."
"Why didn't the bell ring then?"
She glared at me. She just needed a bunch of switches, a blackboard behind her, 2 times 2 equals 5.
"She'll hide it under her dress and a body'd never know it. You, child, how'd you get in here?"
The little girl said nothing. She looked at the woman, then she gave me a flying black glance and looked at the woman again.
"Them foreigners," the woman said. "How'd she get in without the bell ringing?"
"She came in when I opened the door," I said. "It rang once for both of us. She couldn't reach anything from here anyway. Besides, I don't think she would you, sister?" The little girl looked at me, secretive, contemplative. "What do you want, bread?" She extended her fist. It uncurled upon a nickel, moist and dirty, moist dirt ridged into her flesh. The coin was damp and warm. I could smell it, faintly metallic.
"Have you got a 5-cent loaf, please, ma'am?"
From beneath the counter she produced a square cut from a newspaper sheet and laid it on the counter and wrapped a loaf into it. I laid the coin and another one on the counter.
"And another one of those buns, please, ma'am."
She took another bun from the case.
"Give me that parcel," she said.
I gave it to her, and she unwrapped it and put the 3rd bun in and wrapped it and took up the coins and found 2 coppers in her apron and gave them to me. I handed them to the little girl, her fingers closed about them, damp and hot, like worms.
"You going to give her that bun?" the woman said.
"Yes'm," I said. "I expect your cooking smells as good to her as it does to me."